From our studios in downtown D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Tara Lynn Lehman, who is the Deputy Director of Our Place D.C., is by our microphone today. We're here to talk about, per the request, by the way, of several listeners, we're here to talk about not only Our Place D.C., which I consider to be one of the best all-purpose wraparound places for women offenders in the United States. It is an extremely comprehensive program with a stellar reputation, but also to talk about the status of women offenders throughout the country. Who are caught up in the criminal justice system. And Tara, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thanks, Len, for having us. And good morning to all of our listeners out there.
Okay, Our Place DC is the telephone number, and I'll be repeating this throughout the program, 202-548-2400, 202-548-2400. The website, www.ourplacedc, one word, ourplacedc.org. And Tara, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the program today was to talk about the status of women offenders. But first, our usual commercial that our regular listeners are quite familiar with. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We continue to go upwards in terms of the amount of requests that we get on a monthly basis. We're way beyond 120,000 now, and we really appreciate all of the suggestions, all of the comments that you make, and please keep them coming. It is DC Public Safety at media, M-E-D-I-A, .cisosa.gov. You can get in touch with me via Twitter at Len Sipes, Twitter/Len Sipes, or my email directly at Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, .sipes, S-I-P-E-S, at csosa.gov. And back to our microphones with Tara Lynn Lehman. One of the things that we talked about before the program, Tara, was that there really is a difference between male and female offenders, especially when they come out of the prison system. Women offenders have higher rates of substance abuse per U.S. Department of Justice research. Same research, women offenders have higher rates of mental health problems. Women offenders coming out of the prison system are not just on their own. They have, in probably 70-80% of the cases, children that they are responsible for. So they're not just reentering for themselves, they're reentering for their children. And finally, the research shows, what was that final point that I was going to make, completely slipped my mind. So we'll go ahead and discuss what we have thus far and put it in the context of Our Place DC, which I really believe is a wonderful opportunity for offenders coming out of the prison system to get all these wraparound services that you offer. So we'll start off with what is My Place DC. I'm sorry, Our Place DC.
Thank you. Well, Our Place DC is the only community-based support and resource center for formerly and currently incarcerated women from the District of Columbia. The mission of Our Place is to support women who are or have been in the criminal justice system by providing the resources they need to maintain connections with the community, resettle after incarceration, and reconcile with their families. We help women remain drug and alcohol free, obtain decent housing and jobs, gain access to education, secure resources for their children, and maintain physical and emotional health in an effort to lead women and families to self-sufficiency.
And the bottom line behind all of that is that all of the issues that we talk about for reentry, people coming out of the prison system, whether it be mental health, whether it be substance abuse, whether it be find a place to live, whether it's being reunited with their children, whether it's to talk about being in a safe place, all of that happens at Our Place DC, right?
It absolutely does happen. And since 1999, we have served over 5,000 women needing those services. First and foremost, the employment and housing services are often the biggest hurdles the women and families that we serve must sleep over coming out. So we have a substantial employment program that includes employment counseling, employment assessment, employment follow-up, and also, of course, employment job placement.
And the women that I've talked to from your center that I've encountered throughout the years, one of the things that I hear consistently from them is that they, at Our Place DC, they feel safe. They feel safe. They feel embraced, maybe for the first time in their lives. And people listening to this program, if you're not familiar with reentry, everybody needs to understand that we ordinarily send a former offender to over here for job placement, and we send them over there for mental health treatment, and we send them over there in terms of housing. And so the person's got to be traveling from place to place to place. You have a comprehensive wraparound service.
We do, Len. And it really begins at our nerve center, which is our drop-in center. And the drop-in center is safe, it's drug-free, and it's a nurturing place. When I say safe, because most of the women that we serve are also survivors of domestic violence, it's a woman-only safe space.
It's a sexual, and that's the issue that I forgot when I was doing my introduction. The majority of women, again, per U.S. Department of Justice research, have basically stated that they were sexually abused in their younger years, or they've been sexually abused at some point throughout their lives. Now, think about that. A lot of the women that I've encountered in my 40 years within the criminal justice system, they're pretty hard. They're drug addicted. They're struggling with mental health issues. They've been on the street doing a lot of crazy things. And that's something else I want to talk about, because some of the women that I've encountered are not a danger to society at all. They got caught up in drug transportation at the quote-unquote request of a significant male figure, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. And the point is that hard edge that comes with many of them, I think the basis for that is sexual violence at a young age. And so they don't trust anybody. They don't trust, Lord knows that they don't trust the system, but they trust our place, D.C.
Well, some of the women have absolutely been survivors of domestic violence. And I would go to say the majority of the women at some point in their lives have been abused, quite often by someone that they trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And so absolutely, the women know about our place, and we are fortunate to have wonderful relationships with folks actually working inside the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the prisons and we do pre-release workshops, both at the prisons where there are the highest number of D.C. women.
Right, and they're involved in federal prisons through the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
Right.
So for those listening outside of the District of Columbia, there's no District of Columbia prison
right. That
was closed down. Is now, as of 2000, the responsibility for incarcerated D.C. offenders is now the purview of the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
Right, Len, and you touched upon a really good word, which is trust. And because we have these positive relationships with folks working within corrections, and we're able to go in and actually start building bonds of trust with the women that we serve while they're still in prison. So we hold pre-release workshops. Usually there are a couple of days that we spend. Our program staff go in and do, we have a pre-release packet that we share information, women coming out, what they need to know in terms of housing, in
mm-hmm.
terms of HIV services,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the drop-in services. That could be something as simple as getting an ID or getting police clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're able to start building those bonds of trust with the women on the inside. So when they, upon release, they come to our place, and we already have a good deal of information about what their needs are, what their concerns are, and we're able to address that then and there.
Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here, because you and I, before doing the show, we were talking, and I'll get emails saying, Leonard, you left-leaning liberal, in terms of talking about the issues dealing with female offenders or with male offenders in general. And I've always said, and I'm looking at my watch now, and it is 25 of 12. I keep saying, all I'm doing is saying it's 25 of 12. I'm not leaning right. I'm not leaning left. I'm simply stating what is in terms of the statistics, and they're good. Solid U.S. Department of Justice research in terms of the status of women offenders. But the other thing is that they do better under treatment than males. One of the correlates or one of the predictors of doing well is being a female offender, not a male offender. I remember when I taught a Job Corps class that the bulk of my really good students were women offenders caught up in the criminal justice system. Women seem to be more willing to cross the bridge to a drug-induced lifestyle, a criminal lifestyle. Like, they're more seem more willing to cross the bridge than male offenders. And that seems, I'm just going by the research. Is that right or wrong?
Well, it depends. And the reason why it depends is that most of the women that we serve have been charged with nonviolent drug offenses. That's
mm-hmm.
correct. And the majority of women are mothers. And so it's really important for us in our services, which the women lead and carve for us, to be very mindful of gender-specific approach to our services. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I mean, for example, if a woman that we're serving is a mother, then
most are,
I would say over 80% are.
Okay.
Grandmothers as well.
Right.
When we're looking at, for example, legal services, we're going to more than likely be dealing with family law issues, whether mm-hmm. it's child custody, mm-hmm. It could even be divorce. Mm-hmm. That's something that we are addressing within a gender-specific frame. In terms of employment, our employment services, we want to place women who are often mothers at placements where they offer living wage mm-hmm. and also benefits, health benefits for their children, flexible hours, because if you are a mother, you often are going to be the primary caretaker of the kids. So we really want to ensure that the woman's experience, quite frankly, dictates the services that we're able to provide. And we always want to provide services that any one of us on staff would also use. There is not a distinction in our services.
Now let's get down to what I consider to be a chip on your shoulder the size of Montana. That's how I describe so many male offenders. And there's a lot of female offenders that fit that description as well. They don't trust life. The overwhelming majority of, let's just say male and female offenders together, they grew up in households that were dysfunctional. A lot of them had been raising themselves from a very young age. A lot of them, they were very early age of entrance to drug use, alcohol use, very early entree to a lifestyle of crime or being involved in criminal activity. If you raise yourself and if you associate with your peers who have also raised yourselves, you come out of it with this joint sense of it's me against the world. And so many of the women offenders that I've talked to over the course of time, they also had this sense of, you know, I don't trust you, Mr. Government Man. And that's fine. I understand that. How do you break through all that?
Before we break through it, we are always mindful of that. We have all made poor choices in life. There's not a person that I've met, and I include myself there, that has not made a poor choice. Often the difference lies in the types of support systems we have in place. Mm-hmm. For example, I was fortunate to have a cushion. I was fortunate to have someone say, that just ain't right. You don't do that.
Right.
And so when we look at the choices, what we try to model is, yes, we've all made poor choices. Some of us were dealt a worse hand than others. And we want to always be accountable for our behaviors and mindful of the need to make healthier choices. And that's what our place is about. We don't care where you have been prior to walking through our door. The fact that you made a choice to walk through that door is the first step out of many to making better choices.
But my question remains, how I understand all that. And everything you just said is extremely logical. But that doesn't cut the mustard in terms of taking an individual, male or female, who feels that life has not been kind to them and that they survive by this extraordinarily harsh exterior. Breaking through that extraordinarily harsh exterior involves what?
Well, breaking through that harsh exterior, of which most of the women that we serve have that harsh exterior, begins by creating trust.
Right.
It's by treating someone that you may on its face feel like you have nothing in common with, mm-hmm. but after sitting down and talking to them, you actually realize there's more things you have in common than not. Mm-hmm. And so that's the trust.
And that takes how long to break through?
Well, we have worked with women since the beginning of our place, since 1999, who have been serving extended sentences. Mm-hmm. We accept collect phone calls, so we can still have a relationship with a woman who has a sentence of 20-plus years. When the women come, because we're doing pre-release workshops inside the prison, when the women come out, they know about us. Their bunkie has told them about our place.
There you go.
And so it's all about those bonds of trust that we work so hard to create while the woman is still on the inside.
Because you know she's sitting there for the first week, the second week, first month, second month saying, all right, but sooner or later, they're going to do something. Sooner or later, they're going to do something that's going to violate my trust. I know that nobody, I can't trust anybody.
I'm laughing as you're saying that, Len, because there is this wonderful sister that we met at the Federal Detention Center in Philadelphia. And we were giving a pre-release workshop there, and there were about 75 women who came to our workshop, DC women. Mm-hmm. And this one woman got up in the middle of our presentation and was basically, come on, Tara.
Right.
You guys ain't for real.
That's
what's really going on here?
What is your game?
Exactly. What is our game? What are you not telling us that as soon as I walk into our place, you're going to be like, no, we can't help you? And I said, when you come into our place, you ask for me. I'm telling you, we are going to do, to the best of our abilities, help you, legal, HIV services. We have transitional housing. We have a 60-day transitional home, healthcare, employment, our scholarship program, our family transportation program, our children's services. There is no game. And I'm happy to say that once this young woman got released, she came to our place. She came to our She got her police clearance that she needed, her form of official ID that she needed, a voucher, a transportation voucher. And we helped her get her resume together. And she is currently enrolled in a job training program. Mm.
I talked to one woman who has basically said that Our Place DC is her home.
Well, we like to think that
it's their emotional home. They're in an apartment now. They're working. They're reunited with their kids. But Our Place DC and the people in Our Place DC are her real home, not her second home. It's her real home because it is the only place, according to her, that she felt safe and comfortable.
Well, that's really wonderful to hear, and that's why we exist. And that's just certainly a tribute to our staff. But I have to tell you then, unfortunately, not every story is a success story for us.
Of course not. It can't be.
And what we do say is we understand that relapse is a part of recovery. Mm-hmm. We understand that. And as long as you are sober, mm-hmm. you are welcome at our place. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if for some reason you have been reincarcerated or if years have gone by and you mm-hmm. haven't come to our place. You're always welcome.
Tara Lynn Lehman, the Deputy Director of Our Place DC. I'm going to give the telephone numbers now and at the end of the program, 202-548-2400, 202-548-2400. The website is www.ourplacedc, one word, .org, www.ourplacedc.org. I want to continue, Tara, for the second half of the program. We've talked about all of the isms in terms of women offenders, in terms of the research saying that they do have higher rates of substance abuse, they have higher rates of mental health problems. They bring the uniqueness of having other human beings to deal with and be responsible for when they come out of the prison system. And we talk quite frankly and openly about the fact of sexual violence being directed to so many of these individuals. Now, let's shift gears a little bit. I was with the Maryland Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services for 14 years as their Director of Public Information. And I remember we were talking about the women's prison in Jessup. And somebody said, you know what, here's my opinion, that a third, up to 30% of these women, possibly more, could be safely released from the prison system today. As long as they had continuing services, mental health services, employment services, or even GPS monitoring or whatever it is from a public safety point of view, that if they had the right services, they could be released today. It would save the taxpayers of the state of Maryland an enormous amount of money. The women offenders would get the assistance that was necessary for them to make that transition. And it would be a huge win-win for everybody. But no, politically, we can't do that. But they said that these women were not a danger to society, that these women who they were talking about were acting on the request of a male figure who requested, quote unquote, that they carry a substantial amount of drugs from point A to point B. And they came into Maryland and they were found out and they were arrested for transporting a trunk load of God knows what. some illegal drug. So the woman ends up in prison for a long period of time, but she is not a danger to society. She was basically told by this male figure, take this from one point in the state of Maryland to another, or take it from Georgia to New York, or I'm going to hurt you bad. Now, again, I'm not making excuses for these individuals. I'm not. But that's true. That happens a lot, which, and so many people, so many of the women caught up in the criminal justice system fit that description. They're not a danger to public safety. They were basically almost a victim, if you will, of this person who said, do or I'm going to hurt you.
Absolutely. I mean, and you basically summarized the Kemba Woods story, which who I believe President Clinton pardoned several years ago. But yes, some of our women were in that same situation where they were given a choice. You either do this by someone that they thought they loved, or something harmful will happen to you. And what those situations have informed us is our need to really examine what a healthy relationship looks like. When we get caught up in that situation, do we know what a healthy relationship looks like?
People who have been abused a lot of times end up with abusive people.
There is a definite cycle, absolutely, and there's lots of studies that confirm
that. Mm-hmm. Right. So they end up with this abusive person out of some sense of love. Mm-hmm. And this person understands that he's just manipulating the individual and sends her out to do his bidding. Generally speaking, not a violent crime. Generally speaking, transporting drugs.
Right.
Or hiding a gun.
Nonviolent drug offenses. Absolutely. And I also want to make sure for our listeners that these type of relationships involving domestic violence, abuse, are not just heterosexual in nature. Mm-hmm. We also work with women who are in same-sex relationships mm-hmm. that also have been survivors of domestic violence, mm-hmm. More than likely rooted in the same things that we're talking about.
Right.
Do this or else.
Right. So you know, it is, there's a certain point where it just paints a sad picture. And again, I'm totally, for the people who are going to write in and say that I'm leaning too far left, I understand that you do the crime, you do the time. I understand people need to take responsibility for their own decisions, and I support that. And mm-hmm. I believe that people should, under certain circumstances, serve long and harsh terms of incarceration. But nevertheless, you know, in the state of Maryland, we said we could let a third of the people in the Maryland prison system for women out tomorrow, as long as they had the right services. They would probably not present a public safety issue. Now, it's inevitable that one or two or three or 10 or 12 or a dozen are going to go out and get back right back involved in the lifestyle. I mean, that comes with the territory when you make those sort of decisions. There's nothing bulletproof, foolproof about dealing with offenders, former offenders, and taking risks. But nevertheless, that was our assumption.
Absolutely. And D.C., being Maryland's sister jurisdiction, right now the council, I think council member Phil Mendelson, who's the chairman of the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee, mm-hmm. they are entertaining an idea of releasing some folks earlier that have participated in programs preparing for their release.
Right.
But let me just get back also to the numbers, because you mentioned the numbers. Recently, the Pew Center on States talked about how in New York, I believe that $1 of every $15 is spent on corrections.
Right.
In New York, $40,000 a year is spent on corrections. $15,000 a year is spent on treatment. So in this environment of the so-called scarcity of resources, where folks are being incarcerated instead of getting treatment, even the numbers favor getting treatment.
Well, right. What they're saying is that if we invest enough money, the research seems to be pretty clear on this from a cost-effectiveness point of view, and we have the Pew Foundation to thank for this, and Adam Gelb's organization, as well as the Washington State's Public Policy Institute, where they've been able to prove conclusively that these programs save taxpayers an enormous amount of money. and probably do a better job of dealing with public safety than simply incarcerating them without services, right?
Absolutely. And I was reading an article, Gene Healy, who's one of the vice presidents of All Places, the Cato Institute, in the Washington Examiner yesterday, talking about how he thinks reforming the drug policy, particularly as it relates to decriminalizing certain substances, makes a lot of sense.
And Cato, so by the way, is a conservative think tank.
Exactly. So this is not a left or right issue. It is reality.
Well, I get the newspaper clippings every day from throughout the country. And the states cannot afford to do what it is they're doing. And they're looking for a quote-unquote better way, which is one of the reasons why Pew is involved in the business and the Sentencing Project is involved in the business. But the states are basically saying we can no longer afford to do this level of incarceration. We've got to look for alternatives. And again, it's not a political philosophy. It's the states basically saying we cannot afford to do this. And just in case the listeners don't know, and the listeners from throughout the world, I don't know if they're going to have a frame of reference here, but for the first time in my 40 years, we're laying off police officers, we're laying off correctional officers, we're closing prisons, and we're laying off parole and probation agents because the states simply can't afford to keep these people on. So we have a fiscal crisis at the state level. The states are trying to cope with this by making better decisions in terms of how they manage their offender population, and that's why I brought up the Maryland situation of years ago. But we simply said, if we let 30% of the women offenders go and a couple of them go out and do something wrong, it's our heads on the chopping block. Why take that risk?
Right. And not only are those cuts being made at that level, but then you also have cuts being made in terms of the services being offered to women and men who have spent time in prison or are currently incarcerated in terms of employment services that are being cut as well. So it begs the question, what does rehabilitation look like?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on the program today, because Our Place DC is probably the only entity that I'm aware of. I'm quite sure there are more out there. That even for male or female offenders, it is a complete wraparound service. You walk through that door, you get all the services you need, not necessarily at that physical location, but it's all right there. I mean, that doesn't even happen here. To my knowledge, it doesn't happen anywhere, but Our Place DC does that, and there are so many hardened women with considerable criminal backgrounds that I've talked to who are now taking care of their three kids, and they're now taxpayers, not a tax burden, and those three kids are now being loved and taken care of by their mother. Now, that is a huge win-win for our society at large.
Absolutely. I mean, we've worked with several mothers to help them regain custody of their kids that they were obviously not with while they were incarcerated. So the services that one can get at Our Place include, but are not limited to, the following. The drop-in center, as I mentioned earlier, we have clothes. Clothes for women that, again, anyone on staff would wear. We're not going to give you something that we wouldn't wear.
Right.
ID, birth certificates, police clearance, tokens. We also have a phone, fax, and computer for women who would like to set up an email account, check email. Our HIV/AIDS services includes on-site counseling, testing, and referral.
Which is a real problem here in the district.
Absolutely.
And throughout the country.
Absolutely. Probably a lot of folks have seen some of the abysmal statistics coming out of D.C. regarding HIV/AIDS rates.
Right.
And the fact and the reality is that African-American women, primarily through heterosexual sex, are catching
HIV.
Exactly, at an extraordinarily high rate. We also have housing. I mentioned our transitional housing program we have. Speaking of HIV/AIDS, three beds are reserved for women who are HIV positive. Mm-hmm. One bed is not. Mm-hmm. It's a 60-day transitional housing program. Mm-hmm. We also offer housing case management. Our health care, we provide mental health services and substance abuse treatment through our consultants that we have on staff, our licensed nurses on staff. Legal services, direct representation, community-based legal education groups, and also not just the direct services, but also the advocacy part. For example, we are the only organization that is tracking and monitoring the conditions of release of DC women from the correctional treatment facility. Employment, as I mentioned before, career planning, placement, assistance, training, and education.
That's an amazing list.
Scholarship program. We have a scholarship program for kids whose mothers are currently incarcerated or have been formerly incarcerated.
But all this is on the website, right?
All this is on the website.
We have to close
exactly.
the program. We're running late on the program. Tara Lynn Lehman. She is the deputy director of Our Place DC. 202-548-2400. These numbers and contact points will be in the show notes. 202-548-2400. The website, www.ourplacedc, one word, if you will, .org. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We are extremely appreciative of all of the feedback that you're giving us and all the suggestions for the show. We got three suggestions for a show on women offenders, and that's why we're sitting here with Tara Lynn Lehman. You all have yourselves a very pleasant day.